Good morning. First case we'll hear this morning is Choose Life Illinois versus Jesse White. Mr. Husak?
This lifts it up the button?
Yes, it does.
Oh, yes.
There we go. I learned that from the website.
Oh.
All these years I've been fiddling with a microphone. May it please the court, I'm Assistant Attorney General Richard Husak, counsel for Defendant Secretary of State Jesse White, and I urge the court to reverse the district court's entry of summary judgment for the plaintiffs for either of two reasons. First, because Illinois specialty plates are government speech, so that private parties cannot force the government to be a mouthpiece for any particular message, or in the alternative, if the court finds that specialty plates in Illinois are a type of forum in which the state acts as a regulator of private speech, because including the entire topic of reproductive rights, both pro-choice and pro-life, was a reasonable exclusion and thereby avoided any viewpoint discrimination against any views on that subject. A key part of the district court's decision was its conclusion as a matter of Illinois law that the Secretary of State had discretion to issue a new series of specialty plates whenever a sufficient number of people sought such issuance. We have submitted in our opening brief that that was an erroneous conclusion of Illinois law, which is subject to de novo review without deference. It violates longstanding principles of statutory construction in Illinois. And most recently, the Illinois legislature has, in response to the district court's decision, enacted a statute eliminating any doubt about the district court's position, which, under also well-established Illinois law, should be construed as a clarification of the legislature's original intent.
Well, wouldn't that be a new law? I mean...
You mean essentially a...
substantive change.
Well, it would be a substantive change if... It would be a substantive change if the law were clearly and unambiguously to the contrary. There, the presumption would arise that the legislature intended to change the law. But whereas here, the arguments for the interpretation advanced by the plaintiffs and adopted by the district court are at best colorable, and in the wake of the controversy surrounding that interpretation, which the legislative history specifically alluded to, then under well-established Illinois law, the legislature's reaction is deemed as a clarification of original intent, not a desire to change the law.
Well, of course, intent is what's written. You have to go by what is written, and clearly this added sentence says a lot more than it did in the first place.
Well, it did only because the district court sort of read language in the earlier statute that said the secretary may not issue plates unless it gets enough to justify the costs, not as a prohibition against doing so unless that condition is met, but as a positive grant of authority. And that violates multiple principles of Illinois law in the first place. And I think the rule regarding clarification is based upon a common sense principle, is that the legislature shouldn't be forced to accept an erroneous interpretation of the law. Its hands would be tied. If it considers it erroneous and inconsistent with the original intent, it either does nothing and lets that statute stand, or that interpretation stand, or it acts to get rid of the basis for that interpretation and is deemed to be, creating a substantive change in the law. And the approach that the Illinois Supreme Court has repeatedly recognized is it isn't stuck in that sort of conundrum. It can essentially say, no, the court was wrong here. It got it wrong. Our original intent was otherwise. Now, there's a limit on that. It can't do that if the earlier statute was unambiguous. But there's no basis to make that claim here. At worst, if the statute itself, the new statute, is deemed to be a new law, the court would give it the temporal effect that the legislature intended, if the new legislation prescribes such temporal effect. In this case, it says the Secretary of State shall issue only plates authorized by the General Assembly. Well, that's going to happen, if at all, in the future. And this statute says that can't happen based only upon the type of circumstances that the plaintiffs have presented here.
Now, that'll, in your view, I assume, clearly make it government speech, at least at that stage, right?
No, I think that this is a very complicated and difficult analysis. The courts have issued splintered decisions on the boundary between government speech and forum analysis, where there are limits upon the government's ability to engage in content discrimination and viewpoint discrimination. You even have two judges from the Fourth Circuit among the 11 opinions that were issued in the two cases there, both before the Johans versus livestock marketing decision, that say that even if it's government speech, it's still subject to a prohibition on viewpoint discrimination. That's not supported by any Supreme Court authority. But this is an area in which you've got the ACLU of Tennessee versus Bredesen case that says that specialty license plates in a situation similar to this are government speech. You've got two Fourth Circuit decisions, you know, that are inconsistent with each other on the ultimate conclusion of how you characterize the speech. This analysis is difficult.
You're telling me.
It's not one that's well developed, and accordingly, I think this court, you know, we invite the court to weigh in, and we urge the court to focus on the operative factor that really is at play here. And that's, I think, well illustrated by the post-Johans case out of the D.C. Circuit, which is the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals versus Giddens case. Now, that involved a public outdoor art exhibit where one exhibit was party animals that were statues, if you will, of the Republican elephant and the Democratic donkey. And the government decided to include those in the exhibit in the District of Columbia. And People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals wanted to have their own exhibit objecting to the unethical treatment of animals. And the court ultimately said, no, what's going on here is that the government's sponsorship or approval or endorsement of this speech itself, of this expression by private parties, is itself government speech. And private parties then don't have the ability to commandeer that approval and force the government to be a mouthpiece for views that it chooses not to embrace, endorse, or approve.
Now, when the states got into this specialty license plate business, it was, I assume, to raise more revenue.
No, I disagree. I think that there were... No, the specialty plates began with recognition of members of the military and retired
Supreme...
Yeah, but
why do you require a certain number of... people that express interest in the plate before it's authorized?
You mean before the Secretary of State goes forward with the issuance of them? Because there's two steps. The legislature authorizes the new series.
I'm talking about the...
Well,
you want to have a market for a plate because it costs money to make a specialty plate.
It certainly does.
To do that.
Yeah, but,
by the way, I have a specialty license plate.
I'm not going to ask you which one it is.
It's Green Bay Packers.
The Green Bay Packers. Well, you know, I was thinking about examples, and I do want to get back to your question, you know, which is that, you know, when the state of Wisconsin owns a professional sports team, as happens to be the case in Wisconsin, you get unique permutations.
The state of Wisconsin does not own.
Oh, they don't? All right. Didn't they own the
it's privately held. It's a public corporation.
Oh, public corporation. Okay. Then,
anybody can be a stock.
Then I can ignore those problems. But the government has, of course, a desire in many situations not to be laying out money for the startup costs of issuing specialty plates, regardless of the desire of the public to issue those. And I think the record here shows that there are a number of plates that the legislature has issued, but the minimum support for it was not created. But that doesn't mean that the purpose is revenue raising. And in fact, you get the Sons of Confederate Veterans case that totally ignores the aspect of government sponsorship of the message or endorsement of the message and says, no, this is a revenue-raising device.
What is the purpose in Illinois?
It has multiple purposes. But from our perspective, the principal purpose is for the government to express its approval of messages that private parties also wish to convey or bear, and that the financial side of it is secondary. It's not insignificant, but it's secondary.
So it is it's the government's approved speech and some private party's approved speech that both of you agree on whatever the speech is. government and whoever's submitting it.
No, I disagree.
What do you call when the legislature approves it? What's that? That means they agree with it, or they just think it's what?
The legislature passes a law, and that law specifies what message may be allowed on specialty plates if enough of them, if there's enough demand for that plate. But the private parties don't approve or create that message in the legally operative sense. They can show that they agree with it, but only
endorse it then.
That's right, and they reflect that that's a message that they communicate. The district court suggested that because there's an element of private expression here, that negates the possibility of government speech. But that can't be the case, as you know, the Johans case, and I think even the seminal case in Woolley, where the individuals put tape over the "Live Free or Die" motto in the New Hampshire license plate, and the Supreme Court said you can't force them to be a moving billboard for that motto of the state. But there's no doubt that that was government speech. I don't think there's any realistic.
But under your argument, Counsel, Woolley would have come out differently because there would have been no First Amendment rights implicated at all. If it's pure government speech, then the result in Woolley would have been different.
Well, I disagree, and I think I'd like to clarify, because as we've indicated in our briefs, the freedom not to be a mouthpiece for government speech, which we've never disputed, does not entail or carry with it the right to force the government to express other messages that the private parties want it to express. There's a difference between freedom not to speak, involuntary expression by private parties, and that applies whether you're dealing with involuntary expression of government speech or private speech. I mean,
Woolley.
You have Woolley, and you have the Tornillo's case. You know, you've got Abood, you've got the Pledge of Allegiance case. The Pledge of Allegiance is government speech, I hope everybody recognizes, but you still have the right not to stand up and communicate it if it's against your principles. So the one doesn't necessarily entail the other, and I think that's a confusion both in the district court's opinion and in the original panel decision in Sons of Confederate Veterans that needs to be clarified.
But there is a First Amendment freedom to not have one's viewpoint discriminated against when the government opens a forum, speech forum.
If this is a forum, then they would have a right against viewpoint discrimination. We've always conceded that. But that's the tough issue here. Where do you draw the line between government speech and a forum? And it's one that circuit courts have grappled with.
Well, if this license plate must be issued then by Illinois, what will the next plate be?
Well, then it's
obviously,
open season. Obviously, the principle of government approval of messages goes out the window because you know the courts have essentially said you know it no longer applies. I'd like to draw a rough analogy, which is perhaps of limited utility, to rights of publicity in the private sector. People don't have the right to appropriate the likeness of the star of the Super Bowl, of the World Cup, to promote whatever cause they have. There's a value to that. To that sponsorship, to that approval, to that right to have your identification associated with something. Likewise, if in this situation where only the legislature says these are the messages that we approve, and the courts say yeah, but we're going to let anybody get their name on the license plate here, that approval loses any value, and you essentially create a situation which is similar to those in states that say yes, we're delegating administrative authority to our commissioner of license plates to give a specialty plate to anybody who wants it with no limitations on the message except perhaps that they may not be offensive or something like that. That's the parade permit context where you have a totally different situation involving the First Amendment rights at stake. There you clearly have a private forum. Government has created a private forum intentionally, and it can only do so intentionally. But this is a different situation. This is not that case, and I think that the PETA versus Giddens case gives some good examples to explain that. There's a private expressive element when people buy postage stamps that have the adoption clause on them, as the Postal Service has issued, or Paul Robeson, or you name the examples. But that doesn't give private parties the right to say, all right, you've had Paul Robeson, now I want John Birch, or I want somebody else. By allowing people to communicate expression that the government approves, you don't open the door to everybody to say, well, then I want this expression to be approved by the government, too, to the point that the approval element essentially is lost. and it's gone.
Where is the you mentioned I guess abortion as an issue that the legislature doesn't want to deal with. There's also some reference to I don't know what it is, control of reproductive rights or something. Those aren't interchangeable. Obviously, reproductive rights goes much broader to about whether you talk about drinking while pregnant and things like that. How did the legislature put parameters on abortion? How did they say this is off limits?
It didn't do so expressly, and I think there's also a bit of misunderstanding by the district court when it said that non-authorization of a choose life plate reflected a desire to suppress the pro-life view. The only thing that the legislature in Illinois has done is its actions of passing laws approving special license plates with messages on them that it prescribes. It has not passed any license plate with a message like choose life, which is widely associated, and I think everybody agrees and the courts have indicated is associated with a pro-life point of view on the issue of abortion.
I'm not going to dwell on this, but I just want to focus on that just a second.
Yes.
This is not pro-choice, pro-life. It's choose life. And I don't understand how choice is subtracted out of this. I admit it's an advocacy for life, but most, or many at least, pro-choice people say they're personally opposed to abortion. Now, I don't want to dwell on that.
Yes,
but I just want to focus that whoever labels this as just absolutely pro-life is forgetting that this takes both sides. But
well, and I think just,
I know we can go on the long dissertation on that, but
the pro-life message I think also incorporates some additional components. But in the widespread popular understanding, it is heavily associated with that with that viewpoint on this issue of essentially the moral and governmental regulation issues surrounding termination of a pregnancy. I see that I'm going into my rebuttal time. I just want to reiterate, you can't separate the government's approval of a message on a specialty license plate that the legislature has authorized from the license plate itself. The license plate, everybody knows, is manufactured by the state pursuant to its regulatory authority. It says Illinois on it, and Land of Lincoln, and it's on the back of your car by virtue of that state regulatory power. You can't separate its approval of messages on there from the plate itself. And if the court forces the state to approve a message that it has chosen to stay away from, the entire topic, that essentially requires the government to be a speaker for a message that it has chosen not to be a speaker for.
I'll give you plenty of time here, but I just want to focus that I'm from Indiana, where there's lots of plates, although I looked at a survey that was put out and said state-by-state vanity rates, Illinois is third, and I realize vanity is much broader than specialty, but it has Illinois has 9.5 million, and Indiana only has It has 4 million. But I see there's one called In God We Trust.
Well, that wouldn't be a vanity plate.
No, that's a specialty plate.
That would be a specialty plate, yes.
I don't know how Indiana approved that or whatever, but it's obviously controversial.
I think there's a state court lawsuit, so that may not be heading here anytime soon, but it creates...
Against that one?
Pardon
me? Is there against that plate? I know we have...
Yes, I believe there
is. We're faced right now with legislative prayer.
Yeah, and these are difficult issues, and there are implications relating to government endorsement of messages on a non-discriminatory basis when you get to establishment clause and free exercise clause issues as well that I don't think are directly implicated by this case.
Before you sit down, you would concede that the vanity plate program establishes a speech form?
Yes, but there is a government interest in not being associated with certain offensive messages, and the Second Circuit has upheld the state's ability based on that association. It's not like you lose all government association with a vanity plate.
Right, so that's hybrid speech.
It's a type of form. I think hybrid speech is sort of this unusual category that no court has ever identified or held is a controlling category. We're still in this era where all circuit court holdings and all Supreme Court decisions have said that either you have government speech free from viewpoint discrimination or you have some type of forum, although I think there is a case that suggests that, you know, maybe there's room for a third category, and there are the two opinions by different judges in the Fourth Circuit.
What's the distinction then if the vanity plates, which involve a single private speaker displaying a message on the plate with government approval, here where you have a group of people petitioning for access to the forum?
The most significant distinction is that the creator of the message, from a legally operative standpoint, is the government. When you talk about specialty plates in a jurisdiction like Illinois, where they're created by individual laws passed each one by the legislature, vanity plates are pursuant to a program where the statute says people can apply for a certain combination of letters and numbers, and the Secretary of State retains essentially a veto power over messages that are, you know, offensive or scatological or something like that. But that really does create a type of forum by intention, which is how forums are created.
But the specialty plate statute invites private groups to apply for specialty plates, and pursuant to the amended law, simply retains the legislative prerogative to approve it or not.
I want to make it clear that our understanding of Illinois law as it was before the recent amendment and after the recent amendment has always been that private parties have no authority to create, approve, or establish or apply for any specialty plate. The legislature authorizes them. That is the necessary first legally operative step. Without that, there is no power to get a specialty plate out of the Secretary of State or anybody else. The speaker is the government. It's not a regulator of private speech. It speaks when it authorizes the issuance of a new series of specialty plates, and then private parties may line up and say, that's a message I want. I want a specialty plate that, you know, remembers the fallen from September 11th, or that honors a certain group, or a certain cause that promotes drug awareness abuse prevention efforts, or, you know, anti-breast cancer efforts. But that's different from applying for a vanity plate where, you know, essentially the government has said, well, you know, you come up with ideas, you tell us what you want, you can have them subject only to small grounds for objection. Here, the legally operative creator of the plate in the first place, without which there is no such specialty plate, is the legislature in the first instance.
So a Choose Life vanity plate would be okay.
Too many lives.
If you characterize specialty plates as a form of government speech, as we suggest the court should.
Well, you'd have to then configure it in such a way that because you can only have seven letters or digits.
Well, no, the slogan Choose Life is independent from...
I know, but a vanity, you can get a vanity plate that said for life.
Oh, I see, something like that.
Sure.
No, I don't think that there's any basis in the vanity plate program limitations to prevent that type of thing.
No.
You know, maybe there's an objection or there's an exception for hate speech or something like that, but that certainly would not apply. So a vanity plate is a fundamentally different, you know, category or animal here. And for a vanity plate, I think that's a correct character, you know, that would be a correct conclusion.
No, I'm going to give you time afterward, but there what were the so-called 25,000 applications or signatures or whatever for that were submitted to the Secretary of State? What are those? Are those applications? Are those just petitions? Or are they anything?
I think in my supplemental brief I touched upon this. The plaintiff's brief mischaracterizes those documents. It incorrectly describes them as applications submitted to the Secretary for vanity plates under the alleged statutory authority he had to approve and issue a new series of plates. The documents in the record show exactly the opposite. These weren't applications for a plate. These were petitions by people who wanted legislation passed by the Illinois General Assembly to authorize the creation of a new series of vanity plates. There's no evidence that they were ever submitted to the Secretary of State. And, in fact, the affidavit by one of the plaintiffs submitted in this case explicitly states that only one-third of the people who signed those petitions said that they were interested in getting a plate. So they certainly weren't applications. There's no evidence they were given to the Secretary of State. These were in furtherance of a desire to get the legislature to pass a bill authorizing the issuance of a new series of plates with a Choose Life slogan on it.
That's sort of like a petition to the legislature.
Yes, absolutely. And this case went way off track, I think, when the allegation was made and the district court accepted it, that as a matter of Illinois law, the Secretary of State, who'd never done this and had specifically said that he couldn't do it, that and his interpretation of the law is entitled to great deference, he turned people away. He said, I can't do this. I don't have this authority. And then they said, oh, yes, he's got that authority, and we've got enough people that want to buy a plate, and they're discriminating against us because he's delegated that authority to the General Assembly. It doesn't make any sense, and I think that if that misconception is put to the side, the court still has a difficult case, but it's unclouded by this confusion about the question of Illinois law regarding who is it that authorizes a new series of specialty plates. It is and always has been the legislature, and that's a very important consideration in the court's application of the relevant First Amendment analysis.
Okay, well, we'll give you some time after this.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Tafe.
Thank you, Your Honor. You're one of the first people who's ever gotten my name right on the first try, actually.
Oh, good. Well, don't make me do it again.
My name is Damon Tafe. I represent plaintiffs' appellees Choose Life. I'd like to start with something that I think the court was zeroing in on, which is the vanity plate issue. And I'd just like to suggest a situation in which Illinois got a little troubled by some of the vanity plates that were being issued, and they decided to change their system. And they said that instead of sending these applications to the Secretary, send it to the General Assembly, and we will approve each individual plate by law. We will pass an individual law for each person to get a vanity plate. Under our view of this case, there would still be private speech when you get the vanity plates because you, the private person, the private applicant, developed the message, and the government, as the Secretary said, merely acted as a gatekeeper when you tried to have your speech appear on a license plate. We believe that that's really what this system is. And in terms of whether the Secretary is correct that this is really the government promulgating a number of messages or approving some and disapproving others, there are a number of aspects of this program that are very difficult to square with that view. The first being that it's very clear from the Secretary's materials that all promotional materials for these plates are the exclusive responsibility of the organization that sought and received them. When organizations seek and receive the plates, they have almost complete control over who receives the funds that are generated through these programs. And in our case, that would have been adoption agencies. It's very strange to think that the state of Illinois is speaking unto itself, but the private individuals have to bear full responsibility for making that speech popular. And they not only do that, but they have very large control over the design elements of it. You know, these plates are not just words. They have graphic expressions. Ours would be a couple of cartoon kids. Others have a picture of a dove on them, for example. These are things that come from the private organization, and they're what's important to the private organization. In the Secretary's brochure for the pet-friendly plate, which says, I am pet-friendly, by the way, which seems to be as private as you can get, it says that you should say something important to yourself, express yourself. And that's exactly what we think private individuals are doing when they seek specialty plates and they buy them. They are expressing themselves. And we think that the government's allowing private organizations to do this is terrific. But the state of Illinois simply hasn't gone about it the right way in this case. Unlike vanity plates, the statutory framework surrounding specialty plates has no objective standards at all, aside from this numerical requirement. There's no offensiveness standard. There's no hate speech standard, though I guess that's implicit. None of the things that they also could have created a forum, for example. They might have said, you can seek a specialty plate and we will approve it for all universities or merely nonprofit organizations. They haven't done any of those things. Instead,
in your view, is the parameter as far as it, is it just coming up with numbers? What is the standard as you see it in the present law, is even as amended?
We don't believe that there is a clear one at all, as evidenced by the fact that, and that they actually said in their brief that there's no policy regarding this, and they think there could never be a policy because the legislature can't bind itself, and I'll be happy to talk about that. But in our view, this is really one of the most troubling aspects of this case, because at various points, they first said in their motion to dismiss, the very first thing they filed, that these specialty plates are, in effect, fundraising devices for various organizations. And that looks a lot like private speech. They haven't, until now, let's be very clear, until now, nobody, as far as the record goes, and the district court found that nobody has sought to receive a specialty plate and not gotten it. Nobody in the 17-odd years of this program.
Has the legislature approved all of those specialty plates that have been...
Since 1990, they have. In our brief, we argue that there is the authority might have been different before 1990. They have, but the fundamental fact is that what they've done is they've just approved messages one by one by one on a hugely broad spectrum of topics: nature, peace, education, military veterans, just anything you can think of, more or less. And let's be very clear that they haven't done it in any way that suggests they have a consistent framework in mind.
Have they denied any other one that you know of?
No. The district court found that in the record there was no evidence at all that they had ever denied an application or a petition or whatever you'd like to call it. This is the very first one.
Why doesn't your acknowledgement that the legislature always authorized, if there were going to be specialty plates, at least from 1990 on, why doesn't that undercut the district court's view that the secretary himself had the authority to issue these plates?
Well, we think it's just not in the statute, to be frank. The secretary makes a big deal about the step of creating a plate. But as we point out in our brief, the word creation doesn't appear anywhere in the statutory framework. Nothing. It's just issuance. And it's not that legislatures didn't know how to do this. If you look at the statutory framework in Virginia, in Sons of Confederate Veterans, creation was explicitly a step different from issuance. But as we point out in our supplemental brief, this law hasn't even taken effect yet, the amended law. There's really no need for the court to get into it unless it needs to.
Well, if the old law was clear, that the secretary didn't have that authority.
We believe it's not clear, but even if the court disagrees with us, then this simply makes the case identical to Sons of Confederate Veterans, where there was an explicit requirement that the General Assembly of Virginia approve each specialty plate. And, of course, they found private speech. They found that, like the district court found, the primary purpose of these plates is to allow for the promulgation of a diversity of private views while enabling funds to be raised for these private organizations. That's what the district court concluded the purpose was here, and we think it was entirely correct. And one of the problems that we see with the secretary's view of this case, which Your Honor's question touched on earlier, was their justifications for their standards have shifted remarkably over the course of this case. If you look at one paragraph in a submission, it might be because the Choose Life standard is controversial. They've submitted no evidence that it is controversial or how they decide what's controversial and what's not, and that's why we believe the program may be facially invalid too. Other times they say, well, even if controversiality hasn't been a standard that we've consistently applied, and it hasn't, you can just look at the peace plates and the remember 9/11, support our troops plates. Controversiality is definitely present. They said, well, we've never issued a plate relating to abortion or reproductive rights. Essentially, they keep redefining themselves. And we believe the court should find that very troubling, because one of the reasons that we require clear standards in the permit cases and the entire line of prior restraint is that without clear standards that a court can look to and say, yes, you're abiding by these content-neutral standards, it's very easy for impermissible discrimination to masquerade as simply a content-neutral justification, because you can almost always retrofit some sort of theoretically internally consistent framework onto decisions that you've made in the past, even if the decisions you've made in the past never had that framework in mind.
Well, they talk about, I guess, subject matter, a broad term, let's just say abortion. This reproductive rights is pretty nebulous, but just say abortion.
Okay.
They don't want to deal with the subject on abortion, either pro-life, pro-choice, or choose life, which I think is in the middle, but that's neither here nor there. They don't want to deal with that issue. Is that exclusion of a subject matter, would that be in some way viewpoint discrimination? I don't know how they're excluding the subject matter, and that's not clear, even that they, it may be just because that's what came along and they decided to exclude it, but I don't know whether that's...
If they had promulgated a standard earlier, it says, we're going to create this new type of license plate, but by the way, nothing that is, there will be no references to life or abortion, for example, or choice, or adoption. And they had made that standard clear at the very beginning, then it's possible, we need to think about it, that that's an okay standard. We need to know more. The other thing, but that's, again, of course, not the situation we have here. What we have here is simply the secretary saying, take our word for it. And let's be very clear. In their motion to dismiss, they said that the state of Illinois has an interest in not associating itself with messages and viewpoints at which it disagrees. And they're saying that that's not an admission. And maybe it's not an admission. But let's also recognize that the controversiality standard and the reproductive rights standard and all of the other standards that they've offered are also exclusively to be found in their brief. They're nowhere in the statutes. They're nowhere in the secretary's fact sheet or any other guideline. So, again, this is just an example of the troubling tendency of the government to shift justifications to reach the policy aim that it wants.
Well, what is the viewpoint discrimination going on here, then?
The
First Amendment right at issue is the right not to have one's viewpoint discriminated against in what the government has established as a speech forum. And if effectively the state has banned both sides of the abortion debate from specialty license plates, then what is the viewpoint discrimination that's operative?
Well, the only evidence in the record for or against, you know, they submitted no evidence as to why they disapproved it.
Is a matter of fact that both sides are excluded, right?
We actually don't know, because
there isn't a pro-choice plate. Right.
There's not, but nobody's ever sought one. So, again, we're just taking their word that they would turn that one down, too. But we submitted the Prof Declaration.
Well, it's pretty obvious that they would turn that one down, too, isn't it? I mean, if they're going to be consistent. And then you're going to say the state's going to be terribly inconsistent here.
Well, it might be obvious after they reject this one that they know they'd get into trouble if they gave a pro-choice plate. We don't know what would have happened if somebody said choose choice. Maybe they would have approved it, maybe they wouldn't, but we're left to speculate absent any guidance.
Well, let's say that somebody wanted a specialty plate for the GOP and was mm-hmm. turned down, but there was no specialty plate for the Democrats. What's the viewpoint discrimination?
It's a good question. I think, actually, although the district court did find on viewpoint discrimination, and we agree that it is present here for the reasons the Prof Declaration states, actually an easier way to view this case is through the prism of content-based discrimination. Because as long as this is a designated public forum, which we believe it is, content-based discrimination is just as impermissible as viewpoint-based discrimination, and it's sort of easier to get your head around in a situation where that there's been no standards promulgated. And in the airline pilots case that this court decided in the mid-90s, it set forth a standard for determining whether the government has opened up a designated public forum, and it said look to three things, policy, as informed by policy and practice, basically. There is no policy here, so all we have is practice, and the practice has been to admit every single plate until now on a wide variety of subjects, and then also to look at whether the proposed form of speech, in this case, of course, a Choose Life plate, is consistent with the purposes of the forum. The purposes of the forum, as found by the district court, as found by an identical functional aid program in the Fourth Circuit, was to allow for a diversity of private views and to raise money for private organizations. That certainly seems to be the case here. And so you have to ask, what is it about the subject of reproductive rights or controversial statements, taking them at their word, which we believe you shouldn't do, but taking them at their word, what is it about those subjects that's inconsistent with appearing in a forum, the purpose of which is to raise as much money as possible and to allow for a diversity of private views? It's perfectly consistent. The Sixth Circuit has held, and the Third Circuit has held, that when the subjects excluded and the reasons for excluding them have no logical relation to the nature of the forum, that the court should be very suspicious of the reasons that it's giving for excluding them.
Well, what's the answer to my question about the political party plates, though? I mean, if there were rules and standards here, and one of those was no political party plates, is that a permissible exclusion from the forum?
We think it probably would be, sure.
But no abortion plates, pro or con, would not be?
No. I'm sorry if that's what I said. We think that may be okay if the standards are clear. But what we believe that you can't do is just make up the standards as you go along. As the court said in airline pilots, a longstanding practice of openness in a forum doesn't disappear through one anomalous departure.
So this isn't a complaint about viewpoint discrimination. It's a complaint about a standardless speech forum.
It's both. It's
now,
both.
Now this is a very interesting case, but you'll agree in the real world, to convey a message on the back of your car, you do it with a bumper sticker, don't you?
You can.
I mean, you can't. I mean, that's the way. You can put anything you want on that car, any kind of a bumper sticker. I mean, sky's the limit on what you can put on and how many times you can put it on. So we're talking about just the... So it's hard to see how someone is prevented from expressing their personal views on political issues or what have you because they can put any kind of bumper sticker on their car to express that idea.
Well, in Lewis against Wilson, I think that the state, this is the case where the Eighth Circuit upheld a license plate with the word Aryan in it, a vanity plate. And I think that the state would have loved to prevail on the argument that they could have gotten a bumper sticker saying Aryan, and so they don't have any right to a vanity plate under constitutional principles. And we think the same analysis applies here. But do you agree that's
the primary way that people express their views on the back of their automobile, through a bumper sticker?
Well, it's one way. It's not the favored way of a lot of organizations for reasons that in the real world have real implications, as Your Honor said. The adoption agencies in this case, because of the long pendency of this case, because of the stay that the district court entered, have been deprived of huge amounts of revenue that would have been generated through this program. It's a fundraising program and a speech program. So it's different from just saying, here, you can buy our bumper sticker. This is a demonstratively effective way of raising money for organizations that desperately need it. So it is, in addition to bumper stickers, there is a different nature to it. And the fact of the matter is, scholars have gotten into the question whether there's more private speech in a vanity plate or a specialty plate. And they tend to agree that there's more in a specialty plate. And the reason is that you have very large control over the design of the plate. You have a shared community, as Your Honor, I believe, said, among other people who have that plate. And opening up, even the government says that opening that the purpose of the specialty plates is to communicate messages. The only question is whose messages they are. We think clearly the right answer is that they're private messages, but one way or the other, this is a valuable speech forum, and the fact that there are other speech forums on an automobile shouldn't determine the constitutional status of this one.
Now, I understand, and this is just sort of our own informal check, but there are at least 13 states, maybe more, that have this license plate. Are you familiar with other state laws of how they formulate and how they are the same or differ from Illinois?
I'm vaguely familiar. I would hesitate
ask
to
that because this is not unique to Illinois. Obviously, Indiana has this plate, and other special. I mentioned In God We Trust, for example, is a plate. I don't know how that came into being or whether it's initiated by certain groups. I don't even know who gets the benefit of an In God We Trust plate.
Yeah. That's a good question.
So I just am curious because that's what we're going to have to look at. We have to look at what is compared. There are other challenges going on. I believe in Tennessee, it wasn't a pro-choice plate denied, and they sued, and then that's how that ended up to be uniquely pure government speech, and therefore that was the end of it?
Yeah, that's a critical distinction. Two questions sort of embedded there. My understanding, and we'd be happy to submit supplemental briefing on this, but the structure of the Illinois program is very much like the other states. In fact, if the Secretary is correct that the Secretary doesn't have his own authority absent legislative approval to issue these plates, that makes it virtually identical to most of the other programs out there. So I think this is a representative case. And Your Honor's question is exactly right. In the Rose case in the Fourth Circuit, the reason that came out differently than Sons of Confederate Veterans was that it was the legislature's idea. It was to come up with a choose life plate in that case, whereas in Sons of Confederate Veterans, of course, it was a private group coming forward with it. And I see my time is up.
Go ahead. Okay. We went a little long here. But getting back to the Tennessee case, would it be your position then, that you're consistently applying the principle that when the, I guess, legislature approves, I think that was choose life, but rejected pro-choice, that would offend your theory as well, wouldn't it? I mean, you wouldn't just be able to just blow that off as government speech. Instead, there would have to be some accommodation if you took choose life. They opened up the door for at least the abortion issue. Then rejecting pro-choice, that would, by your analysis, that would be a violation of the forum they opened up, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. We, to be clear, we're not opposed to a choose choice or any other.
I understand
here.
That, but I'm just saying we're comparing what other states have done. In other states, in the Sixth Circuit case, jumped on pure government speech. Therefore, whatever the legislature passed, that's the beginning and the end of it.
Right. And that's exactly correct. The problem with Johann's application to this case is the Johann standard was when you have the government sets the overall message to be communicated and approves every word they're under, then the government is not precluded from relying on the government speech doctrine. But that statement itself shows why it's inapplicable to this case, because in Johann's there was an overall message set. The overall message was pro-beef. In the Rust case in the Supreme Court, it was another message set pursuant to a government program that had specific policy aims. In that case, it was to counsel reproductive rights in a certain way. There is no overall message in this forum. It's simply, we want to raise money and we want to allow a diversity of expressions. And it's not government. It doesn't make any sense to say we want to allow a diversity of private expressions, and because that's our purpose, then when it happens, it becomes government speech. It's just incoherent. So because the messages here arise with private groups and not the government, that's why Johann's has nothing at all to do with this case. And that's why Johann's, in fact, cited Woolley approvingly. That was one of the doctrinal cornerstones on which it built its analysis. And we think that the Sixth Circuit simply read it for more than it's worth.
Okay.
Any other questions? Please ask that you affirm the district court.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Huzek.
I realize my time is limited, and I have an inclination to try and...
We'll give him 4 minutes here to wrap it up.
What I'd like to do is answer the course questions as well as try and respond to some of the statements made by opposing counsel. There is no proof of viewpoint discrimination here. That, even if the court adopts a forum analysis, I believe is sufficient to reverse the district court's decision. There's nothing in the record, certainly not in the face of the vehicle code. The fact that the state decided not to be associated with any messages on this issue certainly doesn't prove a desire to suppress one message. Otherwise, no forum boundary would withstand a challenge by somebody who wants to crash the gate and say, let me in.
What are the boundaries of this forum?
The boundaries are ones that the court is going to have to determine from the face of the Motor Vehicle Code, because the body that creates these is not a ministerial official or administrative official. It is the sovereign state of Illinois itself acting through its legislature. You can't conduct some type of inquiry into the reasons why this session passed this plate, that session didn't pass the other plate, and there are some, I believe, in the history that have not made it through the legislature, at least in those sessions.
One, though.
Pardon
you
me?
Presented us with what I'll call a prohibition, at least in hindsight, is, well, we're not going to have any specialty plates on abortion, or if you want to use whatever you talk about, health, pregnancy health, or whatever you call it.
We don't know what the legislature's or the many members of the legislature's actual individual subjective reasons were for non-passage of a bill. We can't know. It's a problematic inquiry. It's one that the courts generally say should not be undertaken. But we can look to see whether the boundary as it exists is a reasonable one. And that's the examination that the court should undertake based upon the face of the Motor Vehicle Code.
We have to then frame it, because it doesn't exist now other than what you put in your brief.
But we're allowed, in light of the difficulty in knowing the intention of all the different members of the legislature for action or inaction, we're allowed to offer reasonable justifications that would support exclusion of that plate without knowing, in fact, what the actual intentions of all these different legislatures of all the years were. But that's the nature of government.
What does the code say about the boundaries of this program?
What does the
code say about the boundaries of this program? The statute for specialty plates establishes the option of having specialty plates, right?
No. It authorizes individual series of specialty plates section by section of Article 6 of the Motor Vehicle Code. Each section is added. It says the secretary may issue this series of license plates with a message, drug awareness prevention or, support organ donation. There isn't a program. There isn't a section of the statute that says this is the overarching provision that governs our decisions for authorizing future specialty plates. It's done on an ad hoc basis, and it can't tie its hands to how it's going to legislate in the future. And the court also can't impose upon it the duty to do so, which would be essentially a futile act.
Well, it does vest the secretary with the authority to administer specialty license plates, right, by receiving the applications for them, by
dividing up the money that's brought in.
Sure,
but that's different from authorizing a new series. And the effort to inquire into the state of mind of individual legislatures with respect to those individual decisions for each new series that it creates, I think is going down the wrong road. It's legitimate to say that if this entire category is off limits, which it is on the face of the statute, then the question becomes whether there is a reasonable justification, not the most reasonable one, not the only reasonable one. And in other circumstances where you do have discretion implementation delegated to other officials, then the courts sometimes say, even if they hadn't promulgated a policy, we'll look at their practice, their past practice, to determine what that policy is. I think the same approach is relevant here. The court should look to see what the government's past practice is, as reflected by the specific laws that they have passed
authorizing the creation of each series or category of specialty plates in the past. And this category, this topic, this subject, abortion, is not included in them. The next question is then, is that exclusion a reasonable one? Not the most reasonable, but or the only reasonable one, but a reasonable one. And a number of cases involving limited forums, and I don't want to get caught up in the terminological confusion between designated, limited, and, you know, and partially designated, limited, and non-public. The rules have been pretty faithfully observed. And if the test is the reasonableness of that category being off limits, a number of cases have said that avoiding politically controversial subjects is a valid justification for doing so, because the government is in a position of appearing to approve or endorse those plates that it has enacted statutes authorizing the issuance of.
So if they open the door for adoption, promoting adoption, which I guess in some circles is controversial, but in most not, this group is promoting adoption, not anti-abortion. It implies it, obviously, but a lot of times adoption isn't considered. If they had this open category where it said, you know, this is one thing we want to promote, adoption, then someone comes along with Choose Life, you say, well, you know, that has more than one meaning.
I think that's a tougher case, but you know, ultimately there is some line drawing that has to be done, and counsel is right to the extent that this court has to be vigilant and attentive to make sure that the government's exercise of its power over government speech and its separate function in regulating a forum as a regulator of private expression is not used in an invidious or insidious way to suppress particular views. Even in the government speech context, it's clear that the government can't leverage its power to manipulate and distort a pre-existing medium. And we recognize the Velazquez case says that, but that's not what's going on here. There are difficult, I think, lines that can be drawn, but the notion that you can sort of, as opposing counsel indicated, jigger these categories between, you know, subjects and viewpoints so easily that anything can be justified isn't correct. This court has engaged in that inquiry multiple times. Other courts have done so. I don't think that the application of that analysis leads to the problem that if the legislature authorizes support the troops plates, which, you know, takes no position on the validity or justification of any war or ending any war. It just says the troops and their families should be supported. I also want to clarify.
Support our troops, but, isn't it?
Well, people say it both ways. You know, the reality is that limited message doesn't get into the deeper divisive territory of different military campaigns. I also want to clarify one thing, which is that the idea that the private groups essentially have control over the messages on these plates ignores the legislative decision. People may propose, but the legislature disposes, and it says this is the message that you shall have. And there isn't the idea that private parties simply control whatever funds are generated from this. Every statute specifies the restricted manner in which those funds go, and they usually go to government programs or to nonprofit charitable causes. There's not an unrestricted ability, and there's no fee. There is no fee authorized by the legislature for any additional charge for Choose Life plates. So the idea that there's going to be extra money generated from these plates if the court says the state has to issue them is incorrect. There isn't going to be money for pro-adoption programs. And ultimately, then, the state would be subsidizing a message chosen not to approve.
Some of the states, I know, do portion out a certain amount to organizations. That's what we're going to have to look at other states
there
as
is,
well.
There is some of that here, too. I do want to reiterate that this is not primarily a fundraising program. This is a program in which the state essentially says, we will allow you to wrap yourself in the banner of the government. We will, you know, give you a message that we approve, and you can communicate it yourself. There is that private expression. But the element of this doesn't negate the existence of the proper characterization as government expression. Okay. This is a difficult case, and I appreciate your court's examination of these issues. I urge the court to reverse the district court's opinion, and not to remand, but direct entry of judgment in the secretary's favor on both counts of the plaintiff's complaint. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement.